Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, May 24th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
I would say very good, Graham, but I'd put my back out this morning, but I'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later in the podcast, so...
Oh, no. Sorry to hear that. So as always, or as we have for the last couple of weeks, we have a new sponsor, which is Carnegie Mellon University. Very psyched to have the Tepper School of Business on board. So we're going to hear from them, and then let's get into it. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. All right. So, Alex, give me the news. What's going on with you? What's going on in the MBA admissions world? I know you have a couple of news items you wanted to share.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, the biggest news this week comes out of MIT Sloan. A good friend of mine, I will say, over the last probably 30 years, is stepping down from the leadership team at Sloan, Rob Garcia. So, he has been a monster personality in the industry in terms of his influence and his guidance, and has, you know, represented the Sloan School obviously absolutely fantastically. And I think where you can really see that is his relationships with the alum at the Sloan School. The industry will miss Rod Garcia, not just the Sloan School.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned his relationships with the graduates of MIT Sloan. I would argue also, you know, like everyone that I know in MBA admissions knows Rod, you know, at other schools, right? He's just been such a... it's such an innovator too. Like I still remember, he's going to be annoyed because I remember thinking he was absolutely nuts when they went fully online with their application back in, I want to say 96, 97. It was somewhere in there. And I was working at a software company and thinking about business school. And I remember MIT announced everything's got to be digital. And that was like a big deal for then. And they've just innovated from beginning to end. I mean, the cover letter for MIT Sloan has always been a unique feature of their process. Yeah. That's a Rod thing, I believe. And so, yeah, he's going to be missed. I will definitely miss running into him at conferences and just, you know, getting a drink. He's such a great guy.
Yeah, no, he'll be missed. Hopefully we'll keep in touch. Certainly the next time he comes over to the UK, I'm sure we'll go get drinks. But yeah, no need to dwell on it, but the industry is losing a super, super person. And I wish Rod all the best in his sort of the next phase of his career in life, which I'm assuming is retirement. He's done very well. I've actually been to his apartment in Boston. It's an absolutely fantastic spot. So, best of luck to Rod.
Yeah, same here. So what else has been going on? Because I know we've had some schools give out late decisions and we've had some movement on wait lists that continue over the last few weeks here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing a little bit more movement on the wait list than maybe we would have anticipated. So certainly last week, a few schools were pulling candidates off the wait list. And last week, Stanford also released its round three decisions. And just as an aside, another fantastic leader at the Stanford School, Marie Mucchini, she reached out to me as soon as she heard about Rod stepping down and so on and so forth. So the Rod decision is definitely sending a lot of vibes around the industry. Anyway, yeah, Stanford released some round three decisions. I know on Clubhouse last week we were chatting to someone who was on the Stanford wait list. I'm really hoping that they got the good news. seemed like, a super genuinely nice person, and that's what Stanford is looking for, as well as obviously highly accomplished and lots of superstar potential. I think we're going to see more movement on the wait list. It's certainly not all doom and gloom if you're still on the waitlist, folks, I think. There's a lot of uncertainty around there. Sadly, for some folks, that's going to be driven by this this dreadful pandemic and these hotspots that keep flaring up.
Agreed.
We are definitely in that sort of final week of decision releases for round three.
Yeah, and I think the only other thing that's been happening is I see an increasing number of schools releasing deadlines, essay topics for the next admission cycle. And, you know, we'll get our essay topic analyses out there as soon as possible. Clear admit, we always do these great breakdowns. I can say they're great because I don't write them. I think it's Lauren and Alex, you kind of chip in on those too. But we produce these, you know, analyses where we literally break down every question a school asks you and what we think they're looking for, how you might want to approach it. We never tell you what to say, obviously, but we give you a lot of really good insights. So stay tuned for those. They're published on the website. And yeah, I mean, speaking of the website, we've been on a bit of a run. I mean, we did a really interesting piece on a woman who works at Nike, who's a Stanford grad, and she's like head of strategy for North America. And that's kind of a cool, you know, just love reading about these roles. I mean, she graduated, I think, in 17. So she's been at Nike for a little while and has moved up. We also had a more recent grad who works at Novartis, who graduated from Cornell and is in a finance development program that Novartis offers. So again, I think these kind of real humans pieces are great if you're a candidate, just trying to sort of see your way through business school and where that's going to lead. And it's also useful, you know, when you go to write your essays, you have an idea of like, what are some of the paths that might be open to you? And then the other thing, Alex, is we kind of republished a piece out of Wharton where an MBA student at Wharton wrote a kind of blog post about their recruiting process and what it looked like for a summer internship, you know, given that everything was virtual. So I thought that might be useful for folks who are kind of worried about like what's business school like in these sort of hybrid modes, or if things continue to be online, or if they're, as you said, flare-ups and things. I mean, this woman wrote a really great piece explaining how the recruiting process worked. And finally, and this will be of interest to anyone tuning in who's heading off to business school this fall, we did a piece on best laptop for business school, where we kind of reviewed some different laptops, looked at the requirements that schools, you know, sort of recommend when you're picking out a PC. And yeah, I thought it was a really good article, and it sort of distills down, you know, what you might want to look for if you're thinking about buying a machine before you head off to school. So that was kind of fun to do. Alex, I don't know if you've been reading any of that stuff. You've probably been pretty busy, but there are some really good pieces that have come out on the site of late.
Yeah, no, I know. And I know that laptop piece actually year on year, that's one of our popular pieces this time of year, because it's obviously a very practical piece.
Yeah.
But also the stories of the alums in these positions, like the student at Nike and so on and so forth, that's, in my mind, these are really good reflections of show, don't tell.
Yeah.
Let's hear a story rather than just be told, well, this is what you can do.
Yeah.
So I think it's hopefully folks really enjoy those pieces.
Yeah. So I know you've picked out a few folks for us to do on the wiretaps portion here, and we'll get into that in a second. A couple of like housekeeping items. We've just announced that on three consecutive Wednesdays in July, the 14th, 21st, and 28th, at noon Eastern, we're going to be doing essay workshops, and they're going to be, we did these last year, they were incredibly popular, and we kind of had lots of people sign up, so get yourself signed up. There's a sign-up sheet on our website. The first Wednesday is going to feature Berkeley, Wharton, MIT, and Yale. We literally get the admissions directors from those schools and then ask them questions about their essays and what they look for and how someone should go about writing them. The second week is going to feature Duke, UT Austin McCombs, Tuck, Cornell, and Ross. And the third date, which is not full yet, we still have some other schools that are going to come on board, but right now we have UCLA, Carnegie Mellon Tepper, and UNC Kenan Flagler. So a whole bunch of schools signed up for these events. They're going to be a lot of fun and a great way if you're getting into essay writing mode in July, which I hope many of you are. It'll be a good way to kind of figure out what the heck you should be doing. And then other than that, Alex, we have our Monday clubhouse. So we'll be today, Monday, as you listen to this at noon Eastern, we'll get on Clubhouse. We've had a blast the last couple of weeks with a really nice audience and some repeat visitors and really good questions. I mean, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
So I'm having a really good time.
No, I'm really enjoying the Clubhouse. Back to these virtual events, Graham.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of how the industry is changing and recruitment is potentially changing as a result of COVID-19, are you seeing, or when we get back to this new normal, i.e. post-COVID-19, are we going to have less in-person recruiting events around the world? and more virtual events, or how do you see that shaping out?
Yeah, I think we've been doing a lot of research on this for some of the schools that we work with. And yeah, I think that, you know, people are realizing that for a basic info session, doing stuff virtually is probably fine and gives, you know, sort of equal access to folks. And so I think there's going to be some reduction in travel over the long term. I mean, clearly this fall, I think there's going to be less just because of COVID still. But I think schools are really reassessing. With that said, schools are also very attuned to the fact that candidates really seem to like to interact with current students and alums from these programs. And so to the extent that they can facilitate that, have coffee chats or do things in person, in market, they know that is still valuable. And I will say we've surveyed candidates and they've said things like, online is great, it's accessible, I can go to a ton of events, but nothing can replace shaking someone's hand, meeting someone and having a more informal conversation, and also just being heard, because a lot of these online events are a little bit more one way, right? So so we'll see. I think the verdict's not fully in, but I think most schools are going to be revising and you know, not traveling quite as much as they used to, even when we get back to quote normal.
I mean, that was, quite frankly, one of the perks of the job, right? We talked about this before coming on air. Some of my fondest memories, hanging out with Rod, for instance, was at the CKEF conference up in Copenhagen. We even, after one event, I think in Belgium, we went on holiday in Stockholm for a few days. I'm not even sure if Wharton paid for that holiday or I paid for it, but I'm sure it's a little bit late to figure that out now.
Right. Yeah, no, I think, it's going to be interesting to see how this all evolves, because I think there is, you know, there's still benefit in like visiting schools, seeing what the campus is like, and there is still benefit in meeting people face to face. So I don't know, we'll see. It's an evolving thing, but jump on Clubhouse today at noon Eastern if you want to chat with Alex and I. If you have any questions about applying to business school or about being on a wait list, we're happy to take those. Alex, I have good news. We got a review of the podcast last week. It comes in from someone whose handle is MCSTRLLB. I'm not really sure what that stands for. But anyway, they left a review, which they titled An Insightful and Easy Listen. And they say the MBA application process can be daunting, but Alex and Graham's weekly insight, sincerity, and charm ease you into the process and make for an easy Monday morning listen. They also host weekly Clubhouse sessions where they happily and thoroughly provide another source of applicant-specific advice. Thankful to have them as a resource on my application journey. So that was cool. I'm a little I'm touched, I got to be honest.
Maybe they've been to the Clubhouse events. That's really cool. Yeah.
A lot of fun. And if you do want to leave us a review, we're always open to that. Or if you just have questions for us, you can email us at info@clearadmit.com. Just use the subject line wiretaps. Alex, I don't have anything else before we get into the candidates that we're going to profile. Did you have anything?
No, I think we need to kick on.
Yeah, gotta get moving. All right, so this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is a candidate who wants to start business school in the fall of 22. They've got 9 schools on the target list, which includes Cornell, Tuck, Harvard, INSEAD, LBS, Kellogg, Toronto, Rotman, and Chicago Booth, and Wharton. They have been working in government prior to business school, and they're not really sure about their post-MBA goal yet. They indicated undecided. They have a 3.27 GPA, which is converted because they attended undergraduate in India. They have 4 years of work experience, and basically they're working in the education and health sector with the Indian government, and you know, doing things like developing curriculum. I mean, they have a whole bunch of different tasks that they've listed that make up their work. And Alex, you know, this is an interesting one, and I believe you picked it up because here we have an Indian candidate. They mentioned they went to kind of a second-tier university in India. They haven't yet taken the test, I believe, but they're working on that. I think they're going to take it this summer. But they're sort of non-traditional, and yet they're overrepresented too. So where do you fall on this candidate and their profile?
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is if you're a candidate from an overrepresented sort of geography, i.e. India and so forth. I mean, it's important, it's nice that you have a different type of career and stuff in terms of differentiating yourself, but still, you've got to focus on that first round if you can. I'm a little bit nervous with this candidate because I do think there's lots of interesting stuff here to like. No doubt, like you say, their work experience is different. They're doing different things. You know, working with the government since 2016, and it turns out they've been involved in some really super interesting projects, and it looks like they've been leading those projects, and so forth. What we need to do, or what this candidate needs to do in the admissions process, is to show their impact as a result of being involved and engaged in these projects, rather than just listing out what they've done. What is the impact? How have you shifted the needle with the work that you've done? I think that's sort of a little bit of a lesson number one here. Number two is they plan to take the GMAT in August. Please shift that up to July. And I think they've now decided to do that so that you can target round one. Don't wait till August. And then it turns out maybe you didn't get the GMAT score that you needed and you need to retake. And then you're going to have to push things back to round two. That is going to be problematic for a candidate like this. Number three, and the most important piece to this, is make sure that you know your goals. Why are you going through this process of applying to business school, whether it's a dual degree or not a dual degree? Don't be applying and thinking, well, I'll find my path when I'm in business school. They'll accept me and I'll go and I'll sort it all out. That's not going to maximize your opportunity in admissions. You really need to have a forward-looking focus. We've talked about this on several occasions in this podcast. This is the sort of candidate that, to me at this point, does not have that forward-looking focus, Graham. So they really need to think long and hard over the next several months so that they can do a great job of showing each of the programs they're applying to why they're a great fit and why it makes perfect sense with the plans they have going forward. But I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The thing that jumped out at me, and I mentioned this in a comment that I left on the ApplyWire entry that they posted on the site, and that was that when I read their profile, I was like, why aren't they applying to public policy school, you know, like Harvard Kennedy or Princeton or Johns Hopkins? And a lot of these programs have a dual offering where you could do an MBA and a policy degree, because a lot of what they talked about, maybe, you know, contemplating in terms of career, it fit more with that, or at least, you know, wouldn't hurt. So they did, I left that comment and they did mention in response that they're considering that. So that was one thing that jumped out at me. It's like, what do you want to do? And are you in the right place? And if so, maybe it's, you want to do the dual degree, that's fine. But then, you know, the other piece for me is overrepresented. The GPA is not jumping off at the, you know, not jumping off the page at me, especially since they went to, you know, kind of a second tier university in India. It's not like they graduated from one of the IITs or IIMs or something. So that jumped out at me, and that means the GMAT or GRE, if they're looking at policy schools too, might be important. So it's a tough candidacy. Like, on the one hand, what they've been doing work-wise sounds pretty fascinating. I mean, working with the education sector and health sector and kind of government work, it could help them really stand out if they show impact, like you said. But on the other hand, you know, if they don't have the numbers, that could be a non-starter at some of the top schools on their list. So I think they need to make sure that that test score comes in where they need it to be. They said they took a practice and hit 690 on the GMAT. So I'm confident they got a couple of months to prep, take it in July, clear that 700 mark, hopefully get into the averages for the schools they're looking at, and should be okay. I mean, I would apply early, as you said, like round one. But I mean, yeah, the sort of verdict's not in yet, I would say.
Yeah, but I would say if this person does apply round one, they knock the test score out of the ballpark, and they're coming in with this sort of different set of experience, and they can really make a compelling case and tie it to their goals, I reckon this person's going to get into, you know, has the wherewithal to really hit a top school, for sure.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, this is a top 15 candidate if they get their goals together, get a good test score, and yeah, just, you know, apply early, you know. So yeah, should be fine. Just do the work. They've got time. It's only May, so we'll see. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is a candidate also who wants to start business school in the fall of 22. They only have five schools on the list, and they are Duke, Harvard, Chicago Booth, Wharton, and Darden. They are currently an Army officer. They had started in infantry, but now they work in finance for the Army. They want to get into consulting after business school, and they mentioned Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. They have a 327 on the GRE and a 3.83 GPA. They attended one of the senior military colleges, so not one of the academies, but a military college where they obviously did quite well. They've been working for 8 years. They indicate that they're based out of Louisiana, but I know that they're, I think they're currently actually stationed in Germany. So that's kind of the background. I will add that they mentioned in their comments that they love listening to the podcast on the way to work. It makes the drive fly by, they said. So I was thinking, you know, maybe it also covers up that weird noise coming from the right front fender of the vehicle too. You know, it could be other, but you know, and also we're not responsible for tickets if they're, you know, if the drive is flying by. but in any event, it's great to, you know, to get this post from someone who listens regularly. Alex, what do you make of this candidate though? Because it's, you know, some top schools on the list. Didn't go to one of the academies, but has pretty good scores. Yeah, what do you make of this guy?
I love this guy. Why not? you know, to me, they've done very well. You know, they're a little bit concerned about their impact in outside of work and communities. And I think, you know, military candidates, that's pretty standard that they're not involved outside of their sort of full-on service to their country and so forth. So I'm not worried about that at all. This person's also doing ultra marathons. I think, you know, if you compete in those types of events, that you're an extraordinary human being. I don't care what you're planning to do. I mean, again, I tried to run a marathon one time and it was the worst experience of my life. And the other thing that this candidate's doing is raising money for ocean cleanup. And this is where I get back to how I pulled my back out this morning. I was on the beach this morning cleaning up some plastic that had been spewed up by the ocean. Last night, we've got a lot of wind right now, and I was tearing seaweed from this bunch of rope and a buoy or whatever. So I'd pull my back out, but I admire anyone that's doing stuff for ocean cleanup, because we live right by a beach. It's easy for me to do that kind of stuff. But yeah, quite frankly, Graham, I really do like this candidate. I just want to make sure their goals are well developed. It seems to me they're going to consulting, and then they're sort of looking to jump into sort of startup, small business in sustainability or health and fitness fields. I just want to make sure that that makes logical sense based off of some of their experiences to date. And I guess, you know, if they're running ultra marathons, they probably do have a passion and an interest in that sort of healthcare, health and fitness field. So as long as they're tying everything together, I really don't see where the weakness is. Now, they have a 327 on the GRE, Graham, and we know that that's a competitive score at any school. This candidate's targeting the very best schools, right? So Harvard is one of them. And, you know, and we know, and we see on Livewire, you know, each round when they're releasing decisions, there are people getting into Harvard with much lower test scores, right? So I'm not trying, I'm going into a little bit of a diatribe here, but I'm not trying to say that the test score is the only important factor here. But this candidate was wondering whether they should retake the test. They really don't want to because they've got a lot of stuff on their plate, which is great. So I would say, you know, probably you don't need to. 327 is a great score. But the reality is, if 327 isn't your best score and you're targeting the very best schools, let's say Harvard doesn't admit you and you get admitted elsewhere, because they will get admitted somewhere because this is an outstanding candidate, would you always regret not retaking that test if you know that you can hit that 330 mark or whatever it is? So I'm only throwing that out there because, again, I do believe this candidate is potentially very much top of the line, Graham.
Yeah, and I, you know, I kind of was trying to be like mega objective, but I tend to agree, like, this candidate is a really strong candidate. And I'll tell you why. Military usually plays well with the admissions committee. I mean, usually there's great leadership experience. And I love the fact that this person is stationed overseas. They're in Germany now, as I mentioned. So that's like interesting and gives them another layer of perspective. I like the fact that they kind of work their way from infantry over to finance. I mean, that's kind of interesting. This isn't like someone who everything was kind of, you know, preordained for them coming out of one of the top academies. I mean, this person kind of worked their way up, which I admire. It shows grit and all that stuff. And I agree, they don't have any like a ton of outside activities, but they're, you know, they're physically active as a marathon runner or ultra marathon runner. And they're raising funds on GoFundMe for this ocean cleanup project. So I think they're doing plenty. I'm not worried about the GRE or, I looked up the percentages. You know, they have an 83rd percentile on math and a 92nd on verbal. I mean, could the math come up a little bit? Maybe, but I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of feeling like they could get in with a 3.8 and a 327, even to, you know, to Harvard. I don't know. I mean, if they obviously were, you know, feeling like they could absolutely get a 333 if they just put in some time, then okay, it doesn't hurt, but I know it's a lot of time. And so,
yeah, that's my argument there, Graham. If they know with a little bit of effort, they mm-hmm. can increase the score significantly. If it's a question of putting a lot of effort in and shifting the score up a point or two, it's not going to be worth it.
Yeah.
And the score in of itself is a very good score as it stands.
Yeah.
My point is, when you're applying to the very best, if there's one element of your candidacy that you know can be improved and you have months to make that improvement, you should make that improvement.
Right. That's fair. And the other thing that I think this candidate needs to improve on, and this is like, for me, honestly, the only true blemish, is I'm not feeling the goals yet. Like, I get that they want to do consulting short term. It's a pretty common goal for military folks and for a lot of candidates, right? It's a great way to just use all the tools you pick up in business school and get a range of experiences before you make a, you know. Right. And so that's fine. What I wasn't feeling was, how do you go from consulting into kind of startup or small business, and, you know, and they had a specific, you know, health and fitness or sustainability. And I mean, you know, anything's possible, but I just felt like they don't seem to know yet what they want. Like, if they had said, I'm going to go to McKinsey, Bain, or BCG, after that, what I really want to do is join a health and fitness company, like, you know, Nike, or, you know, whoever it would be, you know, Under Armour, I don't know. I mean, there are a bunch of companies out there that play in that domain, and I want to, you know, work my way up there. And then in the longer term, I actually want to start my own business in that space or something. Like, I just wanted more precision. Or they could take the sustainability route and really play up their interest in the environment and ocean cleanup. And maybe they want to work in, I don't know, renewable energy. And so they're going to target consulting firms in the short term that do a lot of work with the energy sector or something. I don't know. But I want them to think more about their goals.
Yeah, I think that's an absolute fair point.
Yeah, so that'll make me feel better. But anyway, hope that the ride to work this morning is flying by, and thanks for posting that. So let's move on and talk about our final candidate, and this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this candidate is, this is a decision wire entry, and as always, the person is undecided, so they don't know where they want to go. They applied to Emory, Indiana, Notre Dame, Penn State, UNC, Washington Foster, and Vanderbilt. And they got into a whole bunch of schools, but I'm going to keep it brief here and point out the main decision that they're trying to make, which is, you know, they got into Indiana and they got into Foster, along with some others. But those were the two that are offering them some substantial funding. And so they're between those two. This candidate is undecided about their post-MBA career. They do know, however, that despite currently being in the Midwest, that they want to end up on the West Coast, and ideally in the Seattle area. GRE score was 315, GPA 3.5, and they asked on our forum, they said, can someone tell me the pros and cons of Kelly and Foster? I want to be in Seattle after business school, but I don't know if it has to be in tech necessarily. I like the program at Kelly. It's very well-rounded with a strong focus on academics, and I would only pay $30,000 for tuition versus, I think, what amounts to $70,000 or something. They got Foster to come down a bit since they posted this. But Foster's going to cost them probably about double, it looks like. So, Alex, I turn it over to you. What do you make of this? And are you willing to make an argument for one of these two schools? Like, do you want to take Foster and then I'll take Kelly? Or what do you think?
Sure.
All right.
I'll take Foster. You could take Kelly. Foster wins. Over to you.
but no, in all seriousness, what do you? Why are you saying Foster?
Well, So they did some math. The differential is 70,000.
Okay.
In terms of the choice. I'm not sure, though, it truly is 70,000, because if they choose, and Kelly being 70,000 cheaper, if they choose Kelly, and let's say they spend their 2 years at Kelly, they save 70,000. And then at that point, they need to relocate to Washington, to Seattle. There's got to be an additional cost there, I think, in terms of that relocation.
Yeah.
And that sort of recruiting effort, doing it across geographies and so on and so forth. So what was a 70K differential, I think you could probably knock back to about a 60K differential.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is based on the principle that Foster and Kelly are in the same tier. Now, you might make a little bit of an argument that Kelly has a little bit of a stronger focus on academics, or you may not, but they basically, in terms of their overall reputation, the overall experience, they're going to belong in similar tiers, that sort of top 20 bracket, as it were, just either just shy of the top 20 or within that top 20 at the outer edge anyway. So I don't think there's a lot of differential there. So that wouldn't, on the surface, if it was choosing between Kelly plus 70 grand or Kelly plus 60 grand versus Foster, I'd say go to Kelly. But the kicker here is they absolutely want to be in Seattle post-MBA. The question is that worth 60 grand, Foster plus the cost of 60 grand to be there? I reckon it is, Graham. I think being in Seattle, immersed in Seattle throughout your MBA to prepare yourself for that career in Seattle, and your partner's in that region, so even during the 2 years, you're going to be more close to your partner. And I'm going Foster all the way here. And we've talked about the importance of geography on several podcasts. I think the importance of geography is only magnified when you start going down the pyramid of tiers. So whilst the importance of geography in the first, second and third tier is important, when we talk about the fourth and fifth tiers like here, more important.
Okay, so, all right, so you're going Foster. So here's what I would say about Kelly in this.
Oh, I thought we were wrapping up the podcast.
So what I would say about Kelly is that, Kelly has been doing this longer, in the sense that Kelly has been a member of, let's just call it top 25, so that we're not going to, have to be too much on the bubble here if one of them is 22 and one is 19 or whatever. But Kelly has been a top 25 school for a really long time. Foster's a bit of more of a rising star. And so I feel like, they're more seasoned and know what it's like to be a top school and have a more immersive sort of two-year experience, in part by virtue of where they're located in Bloomington. So I think it's probably a closer-knit community. The other thing, we did a podcast many moons ago that you may remember. I interviewed Eric Johnson, who's the career services director at Indiana. And I was really impressed with him. And he gave a lot of great advice about planning your career post-MBA, and it actually applies whether you care about Kelly School or not. It's just really good career advice. But everyone that I ever talked to who goes to Kelly raves about this guy. And so I kind of feel like if you're worried about being able to get placed somewhere, you're in pretty good hands at Kelly. And so, I don't know, I couldn't help but feel when I read this person's comments that they really liked the program at Kelly, and that the thing drawing them to Foster was just purely, well, I want to be in Seattle after school. They don't even necessarily want to work in tech, so that makes it a little complicated. I mean, Kelly has a really good reputation for like CPG. And so maybe they could land in we talked about Nike earlier, right? Aren't they up in the Pacific Northwest somewhere? Maybe they're in Portland or something. But I don't know. I'm just thinking about how hard would it be to use a Kelly MBA to get to the West Coast? And what I would tell the poster is that they should probably investigate this and just see, is there an alumni club for Kelly grads in, California and in Washington? Because they did mention they're kind of West Coast focused, not necessarily Seattle, although that's their, number one choice. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a bit of a toss up, although I hear you. And a lot of people would argue that Foster's been rising in the rankings, is more of a top 18 type school now. They keep coming up on the rankings and they place so many people with Microsoft, Amazon, all that stuff. So it's a tough call. I would have a conversation with Eric Johnson at Indiana, Kelly, to see what he says. I'm sure he'd talk to them. They're an admitted student, right? So they could really get down and dirty and find out, like, what is my likelihood of landing in Seattle and what kind of jobs could I be placed for there? But yeah, so that's my take on this.
Yeah. So I'm right, you're right. That's the problem with a decision like this. Two great choices, I think. And good luck listening to this and realizing when we're really offering no help.
I think what's nice is that the community posted quite a bit. There are a number of responses to this person's query, and I think there was some good advice in there. So hopefully they'll figure it out. You did raise a really excellent point about them having to maybe relocate. And it's not just the relocation, because in theory, right now they're in the Midwest. They have to move out to Seattle if they're going to go to Foster, but it's more the recruiting. If they need to make some recruiting trips out to Seattle, that'll cost them something, right? So keeping that in mind too. But Alex, you did it again. You picked out three great candidates to profile. Hopefully our listeners have gleaned some bits of admissions knowledge from each of the three. And I guess we'll do it all over again next week if you're willing.
Yeah, no, very good. Good luck, everyone, and please stay safe. Best of luck. Thanks, Graham.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.